Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Willie and D-Mace, hour number two here on 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. This studio has also been the site of a serious accident. The D-Mace bobblehead, which happens to be the Ravens bobblehead, has been severely injured. And it has launched a full investigation. We have put pictures on Twitter. Just a caution before you observe these pictures, they're a little bit disturbing. So it may not be for kids, D-Mace, but there's also a lot of swirling rumors about what happened to put D-Mace, the bobblehead, in a precarious position before he took the fall. There's a suspected foul play from Jared Stillman, not of the actual knockoff, but sort of putting him in
the setup.
And so now B-Man on Twitter, I'm sorry, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I can't wait to watch the episode on the ID channel titled, Who Beheaded D-Mace? Because he was beheaded. So Jonathan Hutton joins us from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. So Hut, it's been a rough morning here. It's been a rough morning.
Keith Morrison's going to be knocking on the door. There's two men you don't want knocking on your front door, Willie. It's Phil Williams from News Channel 5, and then Keith Morrison from Dateline NBC. if you have those two knocking, it's not good news, and you're likely going to prison.
I cannot confirm or deny that Phil Williams and a crew from Channel 5 has asked for the surveillance footage of the studio. I don't even know. Do they have a camera in here, D-Mace, at all times? They have the cameras on us, the hosts during the show, but the area where the bobbleheads, I think it's shielded from the cameras. I'm not sure if we have evidence.
I think I have a collection of Titans bobbleheads. No joke. It's like Eddie, Steve, Javon. Who else? I think Bullock is in there. Mace, you may be a part of this. I may be able to contribute to replacing said bobblehead.
Yeah, because
now this is in storage somewhere. I'll have to go dig this up. But yeah.
Was there a Titan D-Mace bobblehead? Because we it's the Ravens one that's been injured here. And he's post-surgery now.
Well,
his head's back on. I don't know how loose
curse, if there was a curse bobblehead, would they have done the curse bobblehead on his second stint? I don't think they would have. Would they have done that?
Mm-hmm. Mm. They could have.
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
Maybe they did. Preston Penn, I'm trying to think of everyone else who would know. Please contribute to the cause and let D-Mace know if he has one.
Yeah.
Bobbleheads were big back in the early 2000s. I mean, surely they've got one for D-Mace.
I would think so. I haven't
they
seen
should.
It.
Though.
Although, Mace, you know what they did? They had a trade-in. You trade in the Derek Mason bobblehead, you get another one free whenever you became a Baltimore Raven.
There we go.
There is one of the prime suspects, though, is the UC Soros Milwaukee Admiral bobblehead that looks nothing like UC in the fit. Just like the Derek Mason bobblehead. It doesn't really look like D-Mace. Yeah. But another texter says, did Juice say no goal after he knocked the D-Mace bobblehead over? Good stuff.
He probably did.
So, Hut, we've got the table set for the preseason opener against the 49ers on Saturday. The one thing that I want to start the discussion off with is just how thankful I am, as just somebody who likes to learn about what's going on with the team, how forthcoming and insightful Brian Callahan is with the media. Yeah. He really answered all the questions. I think I look back in the Vrabel era where there was a big mystery on who was playing. You didn't know who was even going to dress, but he told everybody everything today. So that helps, I think, all of us learn what's going on.
I think part of it is the fact that the starters are legitimately going to receive snaps. like I and he said this from a while back that he wants to see his players play moving forward throughout the preseason, and I think it, for good reason. I would be nervous about it. Like Andy Reid's playing Patrick Mahomes roughly a quarter in their preseason game. I would be extremely nervous about it. But you have to go through, especially as a first-time play caller and head coach. Yeah, you want your guys out there, and you want the communication between, okay, what plays do you like, what do you not like? You get a sense and a feel for how everything's going to work mechanically through preseason games. This is the area where you can actually do that, and it's beneficial to play as opposed to just getting everything done during the joint practice work. I lean towards understanding what he's doing, and I think if you're going to play these guys, what's the harm in saying who's not going to play, given the fact that, I mean, Levis is going to go out there and legitimately go out there, unlike us wanting to know if Ryan Tannehill is going or Derrick Henry is going to receive one snap in the preseason.
Another thing that we haven't really talked about a whole lot, but it's noteworthy because of the situation. Nick Folk is clearly going to be the kicker this coming year, but there's a new kickoff, right? And I do think strategic how you want to do the kickoff is going to be something to watch. And Nick Folk is going to turn 40 years of age during the season. So he's getting up there in age. You want to see if he can still get it done. The other thing that is, I think, pertinent to the preseason opener is they said that Ryan Stonehouse is not going to punt. He wants to punt at some point in a preseason game, but they're going to hold him back for a while, maybe until later in the preseason. But everything is tracking for him to get back out there.
Yeah, and I mean, and we've seen good signs of him being ahead of schedule. If you mock the cliche of that, I think Stonehouse certainly fits the anti-version and the truthful version of being ahead of schedule. I'm surprised about what he said about his recovery and all that. Nick Folk, you're right. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot of Narveson and Ty Zettner whenever we kick off things on Saturday. The new kickoff rule is intriguing. What intrigues me is to actually see it play out in week one and see how little teams across the league, not just the Titans, actually show, Willie. Because we're told, you know, it's so bland. You know, the Hall of Fame game, the longest return, I believe, was to the 32-yard line. I think there's more tricks in the bag because you could have two returners, two players back in that zone. The kicker's going to Nick Folk. I mean, he's going to have to kick into that zone if you don't want the automatic spot of the football. It is a jarring rule change in the grand scheme of what we've seen across the league over years and decades, really. Not talked about enough. In an era where they're tweaking things all the time to benefit health and safety and trying to put scoring maybe above some of the other fundamental aspects of what we're used to football being. This is another one of those, and they're getting this from the XFL, I believe, implementing it now. And while we didn't see game-changing breakout plays every single return in the spring league, what we did see was more returns and more excitement than just, all right, time to go to the fridge, grab a beer, maybe go warm up some leftovers and come back whenever they're about to snap the football after the commercial break. This will be a reason to actually watch, especially if they're going to have a lot of tricks into what they're doing. And I think you want a player back there personally that can just break a tackle. You break one tackle on this return setup, and you're getting an extra 10 to 15 yards in how I view it, just because of the way that it's set up for the return to go full steam ahead and the type of player you could put back there now.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow, talking Tennessee Titans and their camp. They got a game coming up this Saturday, the first game of the preseason. So we're anticipating that. Now, what are you looking forward to, what are you anticipating, Hut, this first game? And is it any different from, say, last year, the year before?
Man, I think if you're a fan of this football team, you're watching right tackle. And you're watching the edge pass rush. Because aside from watching the football, watching Will Levis and all the receivers and the two backs out of the back, all that, because you want to see if what you've heard through the media is legitimate or not. How bad has the right side of the offensive line really been? And who's in the rotation to work into that spot at right tackle and right guard. And you want to see the addition at left tackle to find out if J.C. Latham is as good as advertised, if Tavondre Sweat is as dominant as advertised. Those dudes are going to get a lot of reps. The reps, though, that are impactful and meaningful over the next 10 to 20 days are coming to right tackle, right guard, and at the edge rush spot where they don't have a ton of depth. And I think it's also important to note they're looking for 8 offensive linemen, not just one guy to start. Injuries are going to occur. Let's assess deep into this game what it actually looks like, because it was not great in that department last year. They were not NFL quality when it came to the depth of this 53-man roster. That's where it actually plays a massive factor, because not only do you need a starter that can be adequate, Mace, those guys are going to get dinged up. And then what happens whenever your rotational players who are active on game day rotate in and affect this offense in a massive way? And I don't know about you guys. Here's what I took away as well. The splitting the reps at quarterback after Levis hits the bench with Mason Rudolph and Malik Willis. They're going to give Willis an opportunity, a full opportunity. And I'm not going to go as far today as to say he's beating out Mason Rudolph. I think he's getting a roster spot. He has to prove he gets a roster spot. They keep 3 quarterbacks. I don't know if you guys
I'll tell you what.
Took the bait on that the way I did.
I'll tell you what.
They want to be convinced to keep 3.
It has been something to note, because I think Mason Rudolph is clearly the backup quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I agree.
But it has surprised me, based on that, how many reps they're giving the 3s in general, but Willis in particular. He's getting a lot of reps at practice for a third-string quarterback. A lot.
I agree.
During these.
I think he intrigues them on what they can do and how they can.
And he hasn't played that well. I don't think he's played real well. For me, he's made a lot of mistakes, fumbled snaps, interceptions. Okay. in the scrimmages.
Totally. Okay, all fair, Willie. Let me put it in this context, though. Let's compare him to what we saw last year at this time.
Yeah.
How would you compare the two players? I've seen a vast improvement in just the confidence level. You know, the defense. We hear they want players, let's see, like Kenneth Murray. They've said they want Kenneth Murray to just play not mistake-free, but not afraid to make a mistake. Mm. Like, just let it rip, one read, and go. That, to me, is also the mentality that I would want Malik Willis to play with, based on what I saw last year, where it's just tuck and go and run and get out of there. I've seen a better version of Malik Willis. And now we get to see him in a game situation with the head coach in his helmet, and the mechanics of how this offense is going to work. Willis has got to also prove that he can run all of that as well, which was in many cases last year, even when he started, many cases where it was not the type of level that you would see out of an NFL quarterback whatsoever.
Now, Hutt, do you think this coaching staff, once they finally got here and got into practice, more importantly, you know, these two-a-day practices, they realized that, because even Callahan said it, like, listen, we need to improve across the line. The left side is doing good, but we need to improve. The right side is still a work in progress. Do you think they finally realize how inept this offensive line is, in particular on the right side, is? Because it just seems like they still, even with, you know, Dylan Raiden's there and Brunsko, and now that Nicholas is back, it still feels as if they don't know what they have on the right side.
Man, I think they kind of knew, Derek.
Mm-hmm. And not in a good way.
I mean, at Nicholas Petit-Frere, let's just be real here. At his best, he's an average right tackle in the NFL. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's what he's proved up until this point, yeah.
I mean, I
hope the
ceiling's
a little higher than that.
But that's what he's proved. Like, he's just an average.
But he's still pretty young. We talked about it.
Where do you set the bar, though? I set the bar at average. I keep using the word adequate.
I think you kind of like temper your expectations, right? It depends on how excited you want to be. But that's a. I think we're all scared to think he's better than that. Yeah. I hope he's better than that.
A year from now, they're upgrading more than Nicholas Petit-Frere, I guess, is my point. They'll have the chance to upgrade more. They need another offseason. We've stated that, too. I've mentioned that. before they, I think they feel great going into actual putting the pads on, like Mace is alluding to. But so if they just get adequate, if they get average play, consistent play on the right side at tackle, that's when I actually think you feel good about everything tying together, because you have Cushenberry at center. And I know they had, you know, the retirement at guard, but I'm not as worried about right guard as I am right tackle, and just getting some type of play where you feel okay going into a game that you can manage whatever talent is going to be across from you on each Sunday, right or left side. I think they feel great about the left three. Mm-hmm. Left side of this line is set, but it's not good on the right side. And, you know, that I know that Coach mentioned Harrell today as a solution, a possible solution, someone that he had to mention as an off the edge because Arden Key's suspension and what we've seen. Hey, who's that player to step up on the offensive line that's a solution? It's got to be Nicholas Petit-Frere. But, again, the solution doesn't have to be he's on the same shelf as J.C. Latham on the left. He's just got to be okay. And I think setting the bar there is fair mm-hmm. for a guy that's a second-round pick that we've only seen play during his rookie season and that's been banged up and coming back. Someone asked me the question recently, is it his job to lose? And I said, he better come back with this mentality that it's his job to take back, not his job to lose. Nothing's going to be handed to him, because there's not much to point to that says that he deserves just to have this as a layup gimme to be a starter on the right side, other than the depth situation where, I mean, if he doesn't just stake claim to this spot, they've got real problems, because it's not like this is NFL quality depth among the offensive line, especially at the tackle spot.
Yeah, you're right. When I look at this team, Hutt, and I'm optimistic about what I believe they can do, if you're talking 11-on-11 offense and defense.
Sure,
I think they can hold their own, especially within their division. But I'm starting to get a little – I don't want to use worried, but I'm just starting to hesitate just a tad bit.
In what way?
With the injuries or the management. I forgot who I was talking to someone on the sideline today. And I said, I don't come from a world where you're managing a 27, 28-year-old individual so he can make it to the season. And then you got another guy that is dealing with a hamstring or some type of soft tissue injury in Awuzie. To me, there are a lot of, we hope this hit, because if it hits, then we're great. But if it doesn't hit, man, we're going to be setting ourselves back.
And if we have
back.
Too long of a list of that, they're not all going to hit.
We're setting ourselves back. You got guys that you're depending on that are either injured or you're managing them so they won't get injured. I know we haven't talked a lot about that lately, but I'm starting to see it. Like the last couple of days I've went out there, the starting corners are not out there.
Right. Jamal Adams would be in this group as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And
Jared said he looks
I'm
like a coach.
I'm not worried, but it's just like these are things that I'm paying attention to.
Well, again, I'll just go back. NFL quality depth, they have not had over the last couple of seasons. They're still working through that, and it's hard to build that back up with six draft picks where you want to have the younger players coming up behind some vets. It doesn't surprise me that they want to manage the practice time of Jamal Adams, for instance, who's going to be a rotational piece and a package type player anyway. But at corner, I mean, there's get to the regular season and bring these guys and put them in for what you pay them to be on an island covering some of the top players in the National Football League at wide receiver who are now getting paid that top-tier money. That's L'Jarius Sneed and Awuzie. Because behind them, just going to the depth discussion, you have a rookie in Brownlee, and then you have Trey Avery, who was a part of the depth concerns going into the offseason. Caleb Farley is a part of the depth right now.
And he's injured. And
he's injured now. Yeah, but mm-hmm. I mean, again, I haven't thought about Caleb Farley in a long, long time.
Yeah.
But he's next up to be a potential backup to Trey Avery if one of these guys goes down with a hamstring, not a hamstring, a knee injury. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the depth that we're talking about. What happens if J.C. Latham turns an ankle in week one?
I think everybody held their breath because he went down today, and everybody was like,
But again, like you normally have the Dennis Kelly type player. This team has normally had that guy. They can barely find someone that you feel okay with that doesn't keep you up at night on a Saturday going into a Sunday game to play right tackle currently. You know, you've got Raidens who's done some things that can swing and do different spots. But again, we've also seen results that have not been good, and he hasn't been a solution at right tackle. It's been Nicholas Petit-Frere or bust right now. My point is they can make things work and get to the regular season with a healthy starting 11 on each side, but you don't want to have to go to your bag of depth if you were to lose a guy before you get to week one, because if you're there, then you're really having some concerns because you're not there yet. That's the difference to me between the Titans and, say, the Texans of last year. They had a lot of injuries, the Houston Texans did. And they were able to overcome, especially the offensive line. I think they played 11 different combinations, 9 to 11 different combinations, offensive linemen in front of a rookie. But they maintained because of and you get that with a lot of high draft picks and a lot of picks in the NFL draft because you've sucked. That was Houston. But they were able to have guys that were able to come in and be adequate. That's what the Titans need right now. They just need some average play because they're getting above average play on the left side. And they're looking for above average play from their quarterback. By the way, Chad Withrow just sat down next to me here in studio and devoured a sub sandwich, Willie, like I have never seen him devour before.
Impressive. Did he breathe?
Said Quiznos. Quiznos as well, Willie, is what he said.
Toasted?
Toasted. Yeah, toasted.
So he just woofed it down.
Yeah, I don't know if we can you guys hear Chad at all right now?
We can hear him in the background, yeah.
Yeah, he said toasted, and go ahead, Chad.
How many bites did he take?
French dip. Toasted French dip au jus.
Willie good
knows
one.
Sandwich well. Willie knows Quiznos well.
Yes, I
do. Returning Chad. Chad's mic is now on. So, yeah, yes.
That's a go-to right there. That's a good one. The hot sub, the toasted one, the au jus. Yeah.
Very nice.
The au jus was delicious. Perfect accent for that Quiznos sub, Willie. Prices have gone up since when you and I went over there.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with that sandwich. Quiznos. Yep.
Did you have water or did you have a soft drink?
I haven't had anything to drink.
How can you eat? Whoa! Stop the press! No, let's stop the presses here. You're a serial killer, man. How can you eat a sandwich without nothing to drink? Come on!
I'll one up you. I just had a foot long French dip, and now I have some Miss Vicky Smokehouse barbecue chips, and still no water, nothing to drink. Wow. I'm gonna roll right through.
The au jus was what he used to wash everything down with.
Oh,
it's
wow!
Got water and liquid involved.
No liquid whatsoever.
Jack can put down some food now.
Okay. Well, glad to hear that the au jus
exactly.
Was okay. Great stuff, guys. Hutt, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll see how the preseason opener goes. We'll have a game to dissect.
Will I see you guys on Saturday? That's the big question.
Oh, yeah. Withrow, don't choke over there, man. Get you some water, okay? Get you a soft drink.
I'm just going to suffer through the meat sweats that I have going over here right now. I'll be good.
All right. At some point, Chad, we'll hydrate.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're going to take a break.
On to the preseason, guys. Thank
there
you.
We go. Yep. We're there. We made it. Okay, when we come back, I want to take it a little further what Hutt was talking about with the defensive backfield, all right, and how the Titans are going about it, what we're seeing at practice, and also they came out with the grades in The Athletic. The grades for all position groups have been evaluated, a lot of analytics stuff. Seems like weeks ago we were talking about the wide receiver grades for the Titans, and remember, there's so many new guys. Mm-hmm. They're looking at last year's numbers, so there's a lot of guys on other teams that you're looking at, but it will paint a picture, I think, of what the Titans have in the bullpen, and what can we expect? How much improvement can there be in this new defensive system? We're going to break it down. The Athletic has a lot of different metrics based on the guys who are the veterans who played last year, and some of them are kind of ugly who played for the Titans last year. We'll explain when we come back. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. All right, we're rolling on with Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Let's get down and grade some of these cornerbacks. Now, this is not the safeties, right? So the Athletic has grades on every team's corners from last year. And we know it's a big story because the Titans have turned over their defensive backfield. So, D-Mace, we just were in our discussion with Jonathan Hutton about this. And there's going to be a lot riding on the new players in a new scheme. It's got potential because the way Sweat is playing next to Jeffrey Simmons at the epicenter of that defense, you have to hope that it's going to make everybody else around them better. If that happens, then that's going to be a positive. But on the outside, if you're going to play the type of aggressive defense that Denard Wilson wants to play with, you know, blitzes here, blitzes there, you need those corners that can hold up. So let's first look at the Titans last year. Now, here is how they graded it in the Athletic. They have four sets. A couple of them are really easy of numbers. Actually, five. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the simplest one. The number of touchdowns allowed by your cornerbacks. Now, I'm not sure all the nuances of that stat because, as you know, DMA, sometimes we're watching a game. Yeah. You're like, oh, so-and-so got burned. He looked terrible. He got to, but you find out after the game he was supposed to have help.
It wasn't his fault. Yeah.
But they had the Titans giving up eight touchdowns to corners last year, which I'm sorry, 20 touchdowns.
20 touchdowns. 20 touchdowns. Eight, man.
Eight would have been really good.
Yeah, that would have been great.
20. But actually, that's the best thing that the corners did last year. That ranked eighth. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that tell you? Last year's defense was pretty good in the red zone. They gave up a lot of yards, but they were able to hunker down in the red zone and hold teams to field goals. That was the best thing the defense did last year. Here's the next stat. Interceptions by the corners. Six. Dead last.
Not an opportunistic defense, and that's what Denard Wilson talked about, them being more opportunistic, getting their hands on football, on the football, and that comes with being aggressive, but also knowing what you're doing within the scheme of the defense, being aggressive, playing, knowing the defense. So they're hoping that adding Snead and Uzi and having, you know, Roger McCreary back and then throwing some of those other guys in there, that they can at least become a more opportunistic defense. And it'll help now that you, you know, hopefully if Sweat continues to play the way he has been playing in practice, that can trickle down to the secondary, get more interceptions. Why? Because now I'm putting pressure on a quarterback. Now he has to throw the ball sooner than what he wants to.
Another stat that I don't think will surprise anybody. Last year in pass breakups, 54 for the season by the corners. That ranked 31st out of 32 teams. Not very good.
Yeah, this team, and listen, not to say, because, you know, Roger McCreary had a good, solid year based upon what he did his rookie year. His rookie year, he gave up six touchdowns. Last year, he didn't give up a touchdown last year. He was the most consistent defensive back that they had. But the problem with that, he was their nickel back. He can play outside, but that's not truly his forte. But because of his aggressive nature, his ability to be able to run, turn with these receivers. And he's always, it seems like he's never out of position, McQuarrie. So they're hoping they can get an upgrade with him based upon the new defense they're playing. But this secondary, they're going to have to, this secondary is probably the most revamped. I know we look at the receivers and the offensive line. I get that. But when you're talking about this secondary, they have two new starters at corner. They potentially have two new starters at safety, however they rotate those guys. So we're looking at a whole new secondary, a secondary that struggled last year compared
everything
to what
new.
They believe the secondary can be this season.
Everything is new, and you have to hope it's better. Because as we continue to go through these grades, I mean, you get the pattern here. Passer rating by opposing quarterbacks, 96.4. Now, that's passer rating, so that's 27th out of 32. Mm-hmm. So, again, it couldn't help. It can't be much worse than that this year.
Don't say that. Don't say that, Willie. Well, we said that before with the offensive line. And what happened? It got worse.
Yeah. You're right. And then they have a defensive production rating, and I don't know what all goes into that. They used a couple of different for the Athletic sets of numbers here. Pro Football Focus was one. There's some other ones. But that's one that I have to be honest, I don't know what all goes into that. But the number matches the eye test. They ranked 30th in that at 455. So now they go into the individual players. Let's start with the guys that they had last year. And it says here in a synopsis. Remember, we're not talking about the safeties, only the cornerbacks. The Titans essentially tore down their cornerback group by adding L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie, giving the red, and of course, this is to give you the visual, in the Athletic, red is bad with these numbers. There's a lot of red on the screen, especially from the guys that were there last year. The reconstruction was very necessary, and as you pointed out, it's a totally new system, so it's hard to just judge in this, but it's just, I think it's important to go back and take a look at where they're coming from. Sneed is coming up arguably his best NFL season last year. L'Jarius Sneed ranked 28th in the defensive production rating, mm-hmm. which is
good.
The lowest metric he has. He ranked 5th in opposing quarterback passer rating, 56.2. Like 56.2, that's a low passer rating. You know, on the back of a football card, it says the passer rating, there's a lot of flaws in that. It's not having to do with the quarterback running, strictly on passing plays. 56.2 is a great rating. Passes defended, 14. That ranked 9th. And interceptions, only 2. But as we know, they don't throw his way very often.
And then also that can lead to, you know, him not having as many pass defense. He has 14,
right.
Which is good, which ranks in the top 10. But just think if they were throwing at him more, he probably would have at least 5 to 6 more, which would probably put him, if not the tops, somewhere in the top 5.
So this is something that we can't gauge from practice because we're not seeing him in practice. He doesn't go through the practices. But if he can do his job and because of his presence make the other players better around him, that is going to hopefully have a ripple effect. Because let's get to the guys that they had last year. Now, the positive is Roger McCreary improved mightily. This is what they write about McCreary. Improved mightily in year 2 of his career. A 20-plus point performance in opposing passer rating from year 1. Last year, it was 85.3, which was middle of the road, but it was over 100 the year before. He allowed no touchdowns last year after surrendering 6 in his rookie year. So McCreary is really finding his niche. He also ranks 12th among corners overall in defensive production rating, the highest of any of the returning quarters. So it looks like he is a piece. The numbers match what I think all of us who have watched him play think. He's just a really solid guy.
Yeah, the eye test matches the numbers that we're looking at now. I'm sure, you know, pass defense, you would want to get that number up because you're ranked 70th compared to last year. Interceptions, obviously, he wants to be able to get more interceptions. But
yeah, only one last year.
Yeah, he's been the most solid guy they've had in the secondary outside of Kevin Byard. And we're not talking about safeties, but he's been the most consistent and solid secondary player they've had. But the problem is he's not your starter. He's your nickel guy, which he can turn. That can be a starter because a lot of teams like to do 3 wides. But, you know, you got to have guys that and I think in his defense, his numbers were good even better. Now, I think because of the nature of this defense and aggressiveness of this defense, he may give up a few touchdowns. But on the flip side, if your pass breakups go up and your interceptions go up, I can live with, you know, the aggressive nature possibly giving up. You know, he didn't give up any last year, giving up 2 or 3 touchdowns. I can live with that if on the other side you're getting, you know, 5 interceptions, 6 interceptions, and then your PBU goes up more than what it was last year. So I think he's going to benefit a lot from this new style of play because he's an aggressive guy by nature. When he was at Auburn, he was aggressive, playing in that Derek Mason type of defense. I can remember, you know, the play he made at the goal line against Alabama you know, to stop them from scoring. It made it very difficult for them. So this kid has a lot of talent, and I think a lot of it will come out underneath this Denard Wilson's new defense.
Again, looking at just cornerbacks, we're not talking about the safeties for this set of numbers. They've got the two depth guys. As you heard Jonathan Hutton in our last segment, he's concerned. We know that Caleb Farley, who they just announced today, is going to be out a few weeks. He's not in the plans. I don't see a miracle jump for him. They have who they have. So who are your backups? Eric Gehrer and Trey Avery played a lot of snaps last year, probably more than you would hope. Of course, the whole Christian Fulton, the injuries he had, the injuries to Molden. Gehrer and Avery had to play a lot. So they got rankings. That's the good news. They played enough to get rankings.
But they're not good.
There's a lot of red.
Yeah.
There's a lot of red. Eric Gehrer in the defensive production ranking, 125. That's way down there. Mm-hmm. Trey Avery, 112. Not good. Opposing passer rating for Avery, 135.3. That's almost perfect. Like 145,
gosh,
I think,
dude.
Is the, or was it 158 is the highest passer rating you can get if it's perfect?
158.3?
I think sounds right. It's a 135.3.
You're not too far off, Avery.
Oh, boy. Trey, holy cow. Only two passes defended. Only two for Gehrer as well. Both of those tied for 114th. Gehrer's passer rating against was good at 16. I'm not sure how that works if he's so low in the other categories there. But I don't think anybody thinks that they have shutdown corners as their backup guys, but you hope that those guys will be more effective in this system.
I think they will.
You need a better pass rush. All of these things can help, right?
Yeah, but I just think the nature of the defense, again, you know, under, you know, Shane Bowen, this defense set back a lot. You know, again, I can remember watching games and it's 3rd and 3 or 4 and they're sitting 7 yards off. It's like, it's 3rd and 3. I can just raise up and throw a quick one step and I'm going to get the first down. Why are y'all so far back? But that's the way they played their defense. It's almost like a watch and catch defense instead of being an attacking defense. So I do believe, and I'm not saying Trey Avery going to turn around and be Rod Woodson or Deion Sanders or, you know, some of these other Champ Bailey, somebody like that, or Darrell Revis. But I think the nature of the defense will cause him to be better just based on them being more physical up front, not letting receivers just run off the ball, you know, run at me, and now I got to read and react from there. This aggressive style of defense, not to say that they're going to press all the time, but I think the nature of the defense, the idea of the defense, is going to cause these guys to play a little bit better than what they did last year. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the season we go back and look at these numbers and we see a little bit less red than what we're seeing now.
That's what you have to hope. We don't know yet about Jarvis Brownlee, the rookie who was drafted
later.
Who's been
looking good.
I like how he moves. It's hard to see. He looks pretty tough. We'll see if he figures into this equation. You probably hope that he's better than Gehrer or Avery. That's the first step. Is he better than the old backups? And now let's save, I don't know about the best for last, but an intriguing guy to end it. Awuzie, right? Chidobe Awuzie, who's got the calf injury, so we haven't seen him much. 2 years ago, this points out that he had an excellent year with the Bengals. But last year, he did not have as good a year. His opposing team's passer rating, 113.5. That ranked 110th. That's not good at all. That was a 50-point drop. Make it a 60-point drop from the year before, where it was 53.4, which would have been probably in the top 10, I would think. So that's a big range. His other numbers were kind of middle of the road. He did not have an interception last year. So I think it's fair to say they're looking for a bounce back. Brian Callahan probably thinks, look, I'm gonna bet on the Awuzie from 2 years ago more than last year. That's what they're thinking with free agency. But this is what free agency is, right? You take some risks if you're looking to patch up big weaknesses. So that could go either way in my mind.
Well, they're starting off on the wrong foot because he dealt with injuries last year, which I think is the reason why some of his numbers dipped from the previous year. But you start off injured again. That, you know, we don't know what he's going to be because he came in with an injured history, and now he's injured with a soft tissue injury now, and they don't know when he's scheduled to come back, at least. I don't know. I don't think they set a timetable of him coming back, like the day he's coming back. They hope to have him before the start of the season, but, you know, a guy that didn't play well last year because of injuries, start camp, and after a day or maybe he's injured again, that's not good. Mm. And this is what I'm sort of kind of like, I'm just holding my breath on.
If Trey Avery has to play a lot, that's probably not a good sign. Mm-hmm. I commend Trey Avery for always answering the bell. It's like, oh boy, who do we have? Who's left? It's December. Everybody's back. Get Trey Avery in there. Like I give it to him. He gets the innings, right? He's available. But he is below replacement level. Now, maybe he'll be better in this system. Time will tell. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number two. We'll talk a little Titans offensive line. We'll also go around the NFL at 1 o'clock and get some good league questions as we move forward with the day. Stay tuned. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
This might seem like an odd question. How did your game change after you had an emergency appendectomy?
Yeah. Man, I really hate to bring it up in terms of, like, I feel like I'm making excuses about my performance. But, yeah, I feel like I lost a good amount of weight and strength. You know, I pretty much didn't eat for a week after I had the surgery. So, like, just totally drained my body, I felt like. And it was, you know, it's hard to get strength back and gain in the season. But, you know, I think it certainly wasn't any help when you're still trying to work through things as a rookie and adjust to the season and adjust my technique, too. And, you know, I feel like I didn't really have – that play strength I needed at that point. But, you know, I felt like I was probably the way, you know, I kind of worked through things and put together some good games, but I think, you know, it kind of led to some of my inconsistencies in terms of just being consistent, you know, for however many games I played. So it definitely affected me, but can't happen again.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's true. If you have the appendix out, you can't have it out again. Peter Skoronski yesterday on Chase and Big Joe. And I like how he couched it, D-Mace, and without really leaning on it too heavily, I think he was pretty frank that when he had – and look, I was saying this a lot last year. Having the emergency appendectomy, and it was out of nowhere between the first and the second game, that set him back a lot. Mm-hmm. Just imagine losing 15 pounds – not being able to eat for a week and how long it would take you to get back up to speed. And you're a rookie at 21 years of age, or I guess 22 when the season started, trying to make it work on a bad offensive line. That is a lot to throw at a rookie. It does sound like Brian Callahan, who wasn't there last year to watch all this, he does think he's a lot more powerful, heavier, stronger, and you heard him reference that when he was talking to Chase and Joe there, Skoronski, because I like my power, my strength a lot more this year than last year. So I'm hoping for a sizable jump from his performance last year to this year for all those reasons.
Yeah, you hope to see that. Any player, especially a player that was drafted as high as he was, you hope that second year because now – they've gotten used to what it takes to go through an NFL season because at most, he's a Northwestern guy. At most, he played 12 games, maybe 13. Well, in the NFL season, you're playing three right off the bat in preseason, and then you got a 17-game season, or what is it, 17, 18 now? I don't know. 17-game season now.
They're talking about 18.
Yeah, 18.
It's moving
and
that
then
way,
the
but
playoffs.
We're not there yet.
So these young men, they were not used to, or they're not used to playing that many games. The second half of the NFL season means the first half, well, the whole season for college football is pretty much done for some universities. So you just anticipate – that the second year, things will get better. For him, at least, with the addition of J.C. Latham and Cushenberry, you hope that, along with Bill Callahan, you hope that just by that alone, he gets better. We're not even talking about him bettering his technique or him gaining back that good weight and feeling good about himself. It's the sure fact that you put a bona fide left tackle or somebody that looks as if he's going to be that guy, and then you put a guy on the right side of him, Cushenberry, who was one of the top free agent offensive linemen this past season. So you anticipate Skoronski getting better. I don't anticipate him taking a step back. Now, will he turn into an all-pro this year or a Pro Bowler? I don't know. All I want him to do is be solid. Be better than he was last year, and his offensive line to be better.
I think that there is a big, big possibility that he will be way, way better this year, Skoronski. For all of these reasons, I like his makeup. I liked his discussion with Chase and Big Joe. I just don't think you can quantify how tough that was on him. And he never complained about it. There was stuff falling apart all around him. Mm-hmm. He's not as strong as he needs to be, and he's one of the younger players at his position going up against great players. That can only help him, which is why on the other side, I'm worried about the catch-up part of this with Nicholas Petit-Frere. But in the long term, and this is what I'm going to stress, the long term, because Petit-Frere is going to be playing catch-up, but he's all they've got, I think, at right tackle. He probably is going to struggle some. But I still think at the end of the tunnel, I'm a little more optimistic about him than I think you are, and I think Jonathan Hutton was in our last segment there, because he's still young. Mm-hmm. And he did get through an entire year as a rookie. He survived, right, on a bad offensive line. And then last year, I mean, I don't even count it. It's like a lost season. Mm-hmm. And then missed all of the offseason. So he's playing from way behind. But I do think the talent is there, and I'm hoping that next year or at the end of the season, they're not looking to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Hutton has already said, look, they're going to be looking for somebody better than him at the end of this year. Maybe that's the case. I still think there's a chance that he could be your right tackle next year. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm too optimistic. Agree or disagree?
No, I mean, there is a possibility. That's what they're hoping, I'm sure, that he can turn into a solid to, really good offensive lineman, right tackle, at least for this season. And if he can do that, then that's one less problem they have to worry about. But if he can't, we got to go to the well again to try to get a right tackle.
Any other thoughts on the offensive line of what you've seen?
Again, people don't understand, because we do this and we have our callers, which we are so, so happy and you're appreciative of our callers calling in each and every day. But I think sometimes callers don't understand how hard it is, one, to just step in as a rookie or a first-time starter and play. That's hard in itself. But your offensive line, the coaching wasn't what it should have been. At least I don't think it was, because it just seemed like nobody got better across the line of scrimmage. Nobody got better. So I just think they were behind the eight ball from jump, a lot of these guys. And they never got proper training or proper technique training to allow them to elevate their game or progress their game forward. It just seemed like either they were stuck in the mud or they were regressing backwards. I don't see that happening with Bill Callahan and the way they want to, run this offense up front. I can't see that happening. And if it does happen, then I think they're going to have a problem this season.
Yeah, I'm not expecting the hogs from
exactly.
The early
I'm not expecting the hogs, but I'm not expecting the blogs either.
Yeah, okay.
From two seasons ago and last year.
Yeah, just looking for marked improvement. All right, when we come back, we'll go around the league. We got some NFL topics we're going to hit D-Maze with. Brandon Ayuk, sleeper teams, some things we've conjured up here for the last hour. And then we're going to get the text line going as well. Stay tuned. Hour number three of Willie and D-Mace next here on 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.